We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip.
We are back at it. Officially, welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I am Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, it's a new year. It's a new season. It's a new era. It's a new podcast without all the streaming issues, hopefully. Knock on all the wood we have available. But good to be with you. Good to be with everyone who's in the live show. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. Of course, it's going to be a lot of fun this season getting Oklahoma State football back on the map. But first, Colby, how are you doing tonight, man? The season's finally here. Dog days are over.
I'm good, man. It's game week. It's later than usual this year. My birthday was yesterday. It was a great day. I got to play some golf.
I didn't wish you happy birthday. My bad. Happy birthday, dude.
I'm not on Facebook. I don't publicize my birthday. It was my Thurman Thomas birthday. I was Thurman Thomas years old as of yesterday. So if you're watching this pod, you should know how old I turned. It was a good day.
Is there a great number 42 in OSU lore?
There's a lot of great numbers.
Terrence Crawford. That's a deep cut for the old.
I think he was
42. Correct me if I'm wrong in the chat.
I bet there's a baseball player who wore 42. Jackie Robinson, Mario Rivera. It's a big baseball number.
Jackie, yeah.
I'm talking about I bet an OSU player wore 42 at some point. It was a great day. Got to play some golf yesterday afternoon, dinner last night with the wife and kid. And it's game week. We're 2 days out. We're less than 48 hours from kicking off the Eric Morris era. So, yeah, I'm great. I'm psyched to be here and happy to have so many people along with us in the chat.
Yes, excited to have everyone in here. Fire off questions if you have them now. We'll certainly answer them as we get toward the latter half of the show. We have a jam-packed show to get to. We're going to pick the game, OSU-Tulsa. You probably know which way we're leaning after our season preview show, but we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it. And look, I know Oklahoma State has been the worst program in the country. They've won, one out of their last 21 games, something like that. But I can still say this. The Big Ten stinks. Are you seeing this score? It's gone final. UMass beats Rutgers 37-21. Look, the Big Ten has Ohio State. They have Michigan. That's never been my beef with the Big Ten. It's the fact that they've got about 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 gimmies in that conference. And Big Ten should be shipping Rutgers out of the conference as soon as they can. And, hey, maybe a land-grant school could join them.
It must be nice to be Rutgers and to get that big fat check every year. That must be nice. You talk about, latching on for the group project. I mean, Rutgers is the kid in class that did nothing and was late to class on the day and didn't even stand up for the presentation and gets the A-plus and gets that big fat check. Must be nice. Must be nice.
And they don't even bring in, this New York – New Jersey market. There's no Rutgers fans in New York City. They watch the Giants. They watch the Jets. They don't care about Rutgers football. So it's just college football is officially back when a lowly Big Ten team just embarrasses themselves. But she's done that plenty over the years. But they do open the season with Tulsa. Colby, we got a lot to get into. And I did find this interesting that Oklahoma State is among the nation's leaders in winning streaks in the season opener. Or did you know they've won 11 straight season openers? They've won 17 of their 18 season openers since 2008, and they're only one of five teams to do so. Number one would be Ohio State, two Air Force. That's 26 and 19 wins consecutive for them in season openers. Georgia's third with 12, Oklahoma State fourth with 11 since 2015 is when that streak started. So, hey,
2015.
We've been terrible, but we know how to win the season opener. Part of that scheduling, a lot of that scheduling, but they have a chance to extend that streak in the season opener against Tulsa on the road.
Who did we lose to in 2015? Because my first thought was Florida State.
Florida State?
Was Florida State 2015?
I think that was 2014, actually.
Florida State was longer ago than that.
Well, it doesn't mean that 2015 was when they lost.
I'll have it within the next five
openers they've lost. I'm sure the chat's probably already firing that in there. But
ESPN has 2015 as a season opening win. They lost the season opening game in, hold on, 2014. They lost to Florida State. Yeah, 2014.
That's the one. Yep. And J.W. Walsh almost beat the defending national champions. Yeah. I was at that game covering it for Channel 5. I was very torn. I was a Florida State, lifelong Florida State fan playing my alma mater. It was not a fun experience for me because Florida State was trying to go back-to-back that year. And, you know, you had Tyreek Hill doing Tyreek things and J.W. going crazy. That was a fun game, even though they lost. But they're playing Tulsa. And Colby, I'm old enough to remember. I distinctly remember. I have a few memories of when Oklahoma State last lost to Tulsa before last year in 1998. I think there was like a late field goal. I remember watching it, the highlights on the news. And, you know, back then that wasn't nearly as big of an embarrassment as it was, you know, last year losing to Tulsa. But look, I have a lot of respect for Trey Lamb. I think Eric Morse said a lot of glowing things about him. They're very similar. You know, Eric Morse coming from, you know, his upbringing was Incarnate Word coaching there. Trey Lamb, very similar background, both young up and comers. So, and look, Trey Lamb talked his smack, but I think that gives an extra layer of really incentive for Oklahoma State. Look, there's always incentive. You only play 12 of these. It's the season opener. Everyone's going to be excited. But when you have that extra carrot to dangle that this team came here and beat you on your home field last year, and they're in state, and you're going to have a lot of orange in the stands, there's just a lot of motivating factors, way more so than playing just a regular lower tier opponent in week one.
Yeah, if the Murray State game and the Tulsa game were flipped, I think it would have a little different feel coming in this week. There's something weirdly poetic about Tulsa ending the Mike Gundy era and beginning the Eric Morris era. It's like, let's just pick this thing up where we left it off. This is the game that got Mike Gundy fired last year. It all ended against Tulsa, and Trey Lamb, he said what he said, and he had every right to say what he said. That nobody gave them a chance. Everybody looked at it as, okay, Oklahoma State can get out of the non-con 2-1 and move forward. And they came into Boone Pickens Stadium, and I was at that game, and it was brutal. It was brutal. And now we fast forward, and they get to start the Eric Morris era. I really like some of the quotes on PFB. There's a great story with some quotes from Jahleel Johnson this week. And he stood up in one of the team meetings and talked about how, like, this is personal for him. He talked about how much he loves Oklahoma State football, how much he loves everything about Oklahoma State University, and how, you know, these other guys are talking about how successful they've been, how many games they've won. He's like, that hasn't been my experience. This has been hard. We've had to grind. We've had to fight. We've been playing in front of half-filled stadiums. Like, we've lost a lot of football games. And he said, this is personal. And I imagine he still feels that loss from last year. If you're one of those guys, one of those returners for Oklahoma State, one of those 14 returners on the 2-deep, man, you got to feel some type of way about the fact that you were there last year when Tulsa came onto your home field and beat you, and then you saw the winningest coach in school history be walked out the next morning. So it, this game holds a little extra weight.
It does. And I think it's a game Oklahoma State should play pretty much every year. I mean, because whether it's home or away, it's practically a home game. Fans can travel. It should be a win each and every year. It's got sponsors now. It's the Gateway First Bank Turnpike Classic. And I didn't realize this, Colby. Tulsa is the team that Oklahoma State has played the most in their history besides Oklahoma. They first started playing, the first game was in 1914. But other than Oklahoma, they've played Tulsa the most in their entire history. So there's a lot of history there. I think it's a game that should continue as long as they can keep playing. It's great for recruiting. You know, Tulsa is always going to be one of your home bases. So a lot to like about the matchup itself going into it. And the line was interesting. I think people are starting to come around to my side a little bit, maybe not to 10 wins, which I famously predicted earlier this week. Maybe being accused of having OSU boxer shorts draped over my head, as Trabes likes to say. But I gave all my reasonings for that on the last show. I don't have to rehash those. But the line did move, Colby. It started, I believe, at 11 or 12, and it's all the way up to 13.5, pushing to closer to 14. So I think people have realized that's not enough points. Oklahoma State's offense is really, you know, by the numbers, the best in the country, considering everything they brought from North Texas. So I did find the early, or the, you know, the line movement leading up to Saturday interesting.
Yeah, I'm even looking at it right now. I'm seeing it minus 13.5, and Oklahoma State is minus 115, a little bit juiced at that number. Earlier in the week on Tuesday, Oklahoma State was minus 13.5, but it was only minus 105. So they've got a little bit more juice their direction at that point. I still think 13.5 seems pretty light. Look, I'm not going to tell people how to spend their money. I told everybody how I spent mine in 2024. I don't want to be responsible for anybody losing their money, but that feels really enticing for an Oklahoma State team that I think, I just think everything Saturday benefits Oklahoma State. First game, but you still have all these guys offensively, especially, who are comfortable with each other. They're going to play fast in that heat. I think they're going to run Tulsa absolutely ragged. Y'all have to pardon me throughout the show. I got sick on Monday, and I'm still just right on the back end of it with a little bit of a fight through it. I know. I think Oklahoma State is going to run Tulsa absolutely ragged on what's going to be 120-degree turf at 245 at Chapman Stadium. Oklahoma State's going to play fast. They're going to be rotating in. I would guess 4, 5, 6, 7 receivers, 2, 3 backs. I would guess that 7 offensive linemen rotate through on Saturday whenever you look at the depth chart. I think Oklahoma State is going to be too deep. I think they're going to run Tulsa absolutely ragged. I've given my score prediction out a couple of times with Oklahoma State winning by 30-plus, and I don't think that 13.5 is nearly enough. So I think a more respectful line would be like 17.5, but people need to see it. People saw it at North Texas last year. That North Texas team was one win away from a college football playoff, and this team's going to be a lot better than that North Texas team was. So I think they're going to beat Tulsa like a drum.
Yeah, and I think there's two ways to look at this. I mean, there's the way I look at it, where I see literally the number one offense in the country just picked up and dropped in Payne County there in Stillwater, and they've improved the offense, actually, by getting a Justin Bowick at receiver, Chris Barnes from Wake Forest. They've upgraded the wide receiver unit from a team that was the best offense in the country, you know, by a mile. You bring back the running back as well. All the reasons we know coming in, that's one way to look at it. Another way is that they set a record for the most newcomers ever with 91. There's a chance, Colby, I think if you're taking the other side of that coin, that this team could look like a team that hasn't played any football together. 91 new players learning how to play together week one might not be the prettiest thing. I think that's where the line is factoring that. I think the line is factoring that unknown element of, okay, yes, they have Mestemaker, they have Hawkins, Young, everybody else. But what does the rest of the roster look like? Oh, wait, there's 91 new players besides, you know, including those guys. So I think that unknown factor, I think, is what drove the line to where it is, you know, less than 17. Because I'm with you. I think it should be closer to 20, frankly.
Yeah, I agree. For all the reasons that you mentioned. And look, if Tulsa covers that line, I don't think we're going to be doing a Sunshine and Roses show on Saturday evening. I would be really disappointed if Oklahoma State goes out and wins this game 40-27. I mean, that would be a cover for Tulsa. And sure, a nice win to start the season, I guess. But is anybody excited if you go beat Tulsa 40-27? I think people have high hopes for this team and high expectations for this team. And anything short of going in there and beating them by 4 touchdowns, I think people are going to be pretty disappointed. Like, the excitement is real, and I think the excitement should be real. I think that's warranted. And I think anything less than 2 touchdowns for Tulsa to cover this spread would really dampen people's spirits ahead of Oregon and make us feel a little bit differently about how competitive we think Oklahoma State might be next weekend against one of the best teams in the country. Oregon very well may be the best team in college football. They're coming to Stillwater next weekend. We all feel pretty good about it right now. If Oklahoma State doesn't cover against Tulsa, I don't think we'll feel very good about it, but I really don't think we're going to have to worry about that. I will be shocked if Tulsa covers that line, and I'll be preaching. I'll be singing a little different song Saturday night if that's the case.
Well, and let me adjust my camera here. Well, if it wouldn't, it wouldn't just be fans disappointed, Colby, if, you know, they don't play well or they don't cover or, God forbid, they lose. It would be the boosters that open the checkbooks. This was not like these North Texas guys didn't come to Stillwater out of the goodness of their hearts. They have one of the most expensive rosters in the Big 12. They have the most expensive quarterback in the Big 12, if not the country. I don't remember where he fell in nationally, but I think he might have been getting less than Sorsby, if memory serves me correctly, even though he's not playing anymore. So I think they've invested, meaning the school and the boosters and Chad Weiberg, and they expect real outcomes with that investment. And so while I did mention they had 91 new players, I think this is the quote that that really stuck out to me all fall camp, all in the lead up. And it's what I've kind of reiterated about Eric Morris and his philosophies. Eric Morris said, quote, our hit rate has been really high on guys that had a ton of snaps somewhere, which means he's not just bringing in guys who were highly touted recruits that hadn't played a whole lot of football and you're hoping you can turn them into something. He brings in guys who have played and have played a lot regardless of level. And I think that's what we're going to see on Saturday. Speaking of, we got to do our uniform preview brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. All day, every day, free standard shipping on orders over $75. If you can't make it to Stillwater for week two, go ahead and get your orders in now and get it shipped to you before week two when you go up to Stillwater. So we appreciate Chris's sponsoring this podcast for many, many, many years, really as long as I can remember. Been a great partner. They're a great local store, great local business. Support our local businesses. They need it always. And we appreciate Chris's sponsoring the Pistols Firing podcast as always. And again, remember, Eric Morris was rocking the camo Cowboys 1890 hat. I think I saw that again on PFP. If you go to the website, there's a great shot of him in the hat. And he got that at Chris's. So some symmetry there. But where do you want to go next, Colby? We got a lot of questions coming in here. I did want to address, you know, you and I were texting this week. Look, I've worked at the Sports Animal for many years. I've filled in as a host on Jim's show. I've filled in on the morning show. I grew up with the Sports Animal. I remember sitting on my dad's briefcase as he took me to elementary school, listening to Jim when he first got back from the from playing baseball. Well, I think the Morning Animals ruffled a lot of feathers. There was a clip that went a little viral on Twitter where Curtis Fitzpatrick, who you and I both know, I really like Curtis. He was mostly just ribbing his co-host Tyler in the morning and was basically saying that this is North Texas and had a lot of vitriol about like comparing OSU to Illinois and all these things. But the genesis was that this is just North Texas North. And you ran the numbers, and that's just simply not the case.
Yeah, pardon me. Woo, my voice is rough tonight. Yeah, I did. Look, everybody wants to act like Oklahoma State just transported the entire roster up here. The reality is there are 19 players on Oklahoma State's roster this year. Excuse me again. Who played for Eric Morris at North Texas last year. There's two more who played for Coach Morris at North Texas previously, went to other stops, and are back. That's A.O. Day, who went out east, and then Tyler Mercer, the starting center. He went from North Texas to Kansas, and now he's back with Coach Morris and those guys in Stillwater. So it's 19 guys coming over. You look at the two deep. On the two deep, there are 14 North Texas transfers on the two deep. There are 14 returners from Oklahoma State season a year ago on the two deep as well. The rest of it is made up of mostly Power Four transfers, sprinkling in the occasional FCS guy like a Sean Torgerson, who's listed as an or at right tackle along with Ashton Lepo. But yeah, it's just it definitely seemed like it was a little tongue in cheek, like he was ribbing his co-host a little bit. I actually don't know Curtis. I mean, I've listened to Curtis for a long time, like everybody else has. I think the mean green North stuff, I hope it's a joke. I hope it's tongue in cheek. I hope it's not too serious because, boy, if it is serious, you really haven't been paying attention. You certainly haven't been listening to this show. You haven't been on pistolsfiringblog.com. I mean, this show and the website, the Reload guys, like I think this is the stop for all your Oklahoma State stuff. And we've been telling you all summer, like if you think it's just the North Texas team that's taking the field in different shirts, it's not. It's not. It's the absolute best of the best from that team. Who would know better than Raj Murdy and Eric Morris and Skylar Cassidy who the best of the best are on that team who are worthy of being here? Like he talked about Justin Boak. People in the comments are talking about Justin Boak. Curtis was ribbing Justin Boak and he didn't catch enough passes and stuff. And Boak, he's not an Illinois guy. He's better than that. Yeah, Aaron Young. He's not an Illinois guy. He's better than that. He is. He's 6'5", 220. And you look at that 13.5, again, I'm not telling people how to spend their money. I think that this might be the value of the season in terms of betting lines, because I think that there are going to be people in Las Vegas, Nevada, who look up Saturday night and they're like, who is Justin Boak? Who is Chris Barnes? What is this 87-yard end around we just watched from Chris Barnes? Like, who are these guys? But yeah, I think that Oklahoma State has a lot of guys ready to jump out of the mystery box, and people who haven't been on PFP, listen to this show, listen to the Reload guys, people who haven't been really dialed in all summer, they're going to hear some names Saturday for the first time, and they're going to go, whoa, and be a little taken aback by how much talent is on that field that was not wearing green last year.
Yeah, I think Eric Morris knows what's at stake. This is a real step up for him coming to Oklahoma State. He knows the stakes. He knows that this is make or break for him in year one as soon as he gets there. And what did he do? To your point about Raj Murty and him, they were very selective by only bringing, what, 19 you mentioned? They didn't bring 53 guys from North Texas, just bring it the whole truckload of dudes over. And they were very selective. They brought over the guys they thought were the most impactful and the ones that he thought would help them win games immediately. And so, yeah, I mean, I think most of it was tongue in cheek, but I did go on with Sam Humphries, I think it was last night, Tuesday night. And he asked me, you know, about what player do you think we're going to be talking about that maybe no one's, I say no one, that people beyond Mestemaker, Hawkins, Young, who are we talking about? And I singled out Justin Bowick, just like everyone in the comments are right now. I think, and again, it's what you and I talked about was really what kind of turned my head, because he is a Illinois receiver. He did only have 22 catches, but five of those were touchdowns, which leads you, if you never watched the guy, you're like, okay, 6'5 dude from Illinois. He just must be a jump ball guy when they get down in the red zone, right? Well, you hear the talk out of fall camp that he's winning the 10-yard sprints with guys like Chris Barnes on the roster, the little human rocket that he is, little Tyreek Light that he is. That is what really turned my head. I was like, whoa, this dude has way more ability with his speed and quickness than just being a big target. So that's a guy that when I keep saying they've brought the number one offense in the country and improved it, I think I'm speaking to the Justin Bowick point. But yeah, so it's going to be an interesting game. Look, Tulsa's got some talent. They got a running back in from Auburn who was third string last year, but he was the number three tailback in the country coming out of high school. They returned their quarterback. They returned, I think Trey Lamb said they returned 80 to 90% of their roster from last year. So in a day and age where OSU's bringing in 91 new players, they've retained about 90% of their roster. I think that does bode well for Oklahoma State. Look, I don't think they're going to be up 38-0 after the first half. But so I think it's a good challenge week one. I don't think it's going to be just a cakewalk, even though my final score will indicate that. I think it'll be... there'll be a real feeling out process, as you know, Colby. Week one always typically is.
I don't know what the percentage is. I'm showing here on PFB that Tulsa had 25 transfers coming in, so probably kept 75-80% of the roster. I don't know how many guys are on college football rosters these days, but they kept a lot of guys around. The rating of the guys they got over in the portal of those 24 guys, 84.5. Leads the American Conference. So Tulsa did well in the portal, you know, a school that doesn't have a ton of money, that has rigorous academic standards. Like, we kind of know what Tulsa is up against, and it seems like Trey Lamb is doing a good job up there of trying to build a program, despite the fact that last year, aside from that big Oklahoma State win, they won three other games. So we're going to need to see some improvement from Tulsa for them to compete. I imagine the first quarter, I don't think it's going to be 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. I think at the end of the first quarter, it might be 14-7 Oklahoma State, something like that. And we're all feeling, you know, okay, good, not great. And then maybe Oklahoma State takes a 31-10 lead at halftime or something. I don't know. That's kind of where I think this is going. I don't think it's going to be an overly competitive football game in the second half. I could be wrong about that. But I want to see what's happening up front with Oklahoma State. The first, like, two drives of the game, I need to see if Oklahoma State's offensive line is pushing Tulsa's defensive line around. Like, I need to know if Mestemaker has 3 seconds to stand back there and go through his reads, and I need to see whether Caleb Hawkins has lanes to run through. Obviously, it's going to be like being transported to another dimension watching the Eric Morris offense after what we've watched the past several seasons with Casey Dunn and Mike Gundy, the phone booth stuff, no motion, everybody stand still, let's run the same four plays over and over again. Oh, running it off right guard didn't work, let's throw a go ball, let's throw a fade, see how that works. I think that we as fans are going to be really excited in that first half watching some of the movement, watching our coach scheme guys into space. Like, that's the other thing that people are just, I cannot get over the amount of conversations that I've had with people in the past 6 months where they're like, I don't know, how big of a leap can you really take from 1 year to the next? I'm like, I don't know. It's a whole different team. It's a whole different staff. Like, we're going to be watching something very different on Saturday than what we've been watching. I mean, when's the last time we saw a coach really go out and be able to dominate the opposing coordinator from an X's and O standpoint and just scheme guys into space. Like, this is those few years that Lincoln Riley was at Oklahoma. It drove me nuts watching that team, playing against that team, because they had so many concepts that they would run where you'd get a guy coming underneath on a mesh route, or he would have a tight end going up the seam, but they sent a receiver underneath the underneath side of the formation that took the linebacker, and all of a sudden somebody's wide open down the middle of the field. And it just drove me nuts to watch them do that. And we weren't doing any of that. I'll remind everybody we won the final bedlam anyway, but it's going to be very different, Carson. And I don't think that factor is being taken into account enough either, that this is going to be like transporting our offense from 1968 to a full 2026. Like, let's get all the gadgets out and have some fun. So I don't think that we've probably even made enough about the offensive coaching change and how different that is going to look stylistically and how much easier it is to play football the way Eric Morris offense plays football.
I would agree with that. And there's an extra layer to it, but hold that thought. I did the Chris's ad read. I didn't give my uniform prediction or preview. Someone in the comments beat me to it. I'm going to go white, orange, what they wore last time in 2019. I'm going to go Patriot Pete on the helmet, orange face mask, white, orange. I could see them going all white with, I think Tulsa put out like a temperature map of their stadium, how hot it's going to be on game day. But they could go all white, but I'm going to go with tradition, which is white, orange when they face Tulsa on the road.
Yeah, I'm not going tradition. I think we were both always going to go with some form of white for a road game to open the season when it's going to be 180 million degrees. I'm going all white, Carson. Just iced out. First game. Tradition, that's all fun and everything. This is a new era. Let's just go out. Icy whites. Week one, brand on the side of the helmet. I don't think we need to go crazy. All white, brand on the side of the helmet. Let's do it. I think that's one of the cleanest looks Oklahoma State has, and I really hope they run out in the all whites.
Yeah, Aaron Yunt says, all white, blank slate. I like that. Oh. Clearing the decks. I would like to see them do, there was one time they did the white helmet with like either the silver brand or maybe it was a white brand. I would just do an all white brand on a white helmet. Just go do the whole deal. Maybe we'll see a new helmet as well. So that's your Chris's University Spirit uniform preview. So the extra layer to what you mentioned about just Eric Morris's offense and scheming people into space, it's even harder to defend because not only do you have Morris doing all of that behind the scenes and Sean Brophy, which was a big reason why Mestemaker followed Morris as well, was to play for Sean Brophy and his play calling. It's a unique setup with Mestemaker in that Morris has said that Mestemaker has four play calls that he has at any given time, and he can pick the one he wants, the one he thinks in the moment, feeling the game out, the ones he sees that are open in his mind. So it's a little bit like those option routes that became in fad 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, where you can have the right coverage, but the player has the option to beat that coverage with his brain. And now you take it another notch up to the quarterback. This is, Colby, this is like NCAA football when I was in the Delt house up in Stillwater playing Xbox, where I can audible at the line, I can change the play after it's already been called in, and I've got four options to go to on my hot reads, basically. And I'm basically playing a video game is what Mestemaker is going to be doing here. So I think that is something I'm really looking forward to seeing is how much do they scheme players open and how much is Mestemaker in sync with Morris early on to where they're getting the ball in open space. That's what you and I have been begging for so long. I think that'll be a good indicator watching the game on Saturday. If you see Mestemaker calling something at the line, switching things up, audibling, and it leads to a wide open running back, receiver, what have you, I think that'll be a good indicator that not only are they in sync, but what's to come this season.
Yeah, and you talked earlier about the donors and you write the check. You expect to see some things week one against Tulsa. Drew Mestemaker had some good quotes this week, too. He talked about the fact that he doesn't feel like he has to go out and be a superhero. And he even made the comment. He said, we pay guys here to go out and be superheroes. I've just got to get the ball to them. And he's right. Let Justin Bowick get 6'5", 220, 225, whatever, beating everybody in all the drills, jumping out of the building. Let that guy go be a superhero. Let Chris Barnes. Maybe he runs a 4-3-2. Let Chris Barnes go be a superhero. Just get the ball to him. We saw some film come out of Oklahoma State fall camp 3-4 weeks ago, and they were running that hurry up drill. It's like a 90-second clip that they put out, and Chris Barnes was out on the field, and it was like play ins, boom, snap, balls out quick to Chris Barnes, see if we can get him out around on the corner. Like, I want to see some of that stuff. And like he said, let those guys be superheroes. And we haven't even talked about Caleb Hawkins yet, Carson. Like, I'm so excited to watch Caleb Hawkins run. This dude, he is like prototypical NFL size. 6'2", 219 is what he's listed as. I see him standing next to Mestermaker. He looks closer to Mestermaker's height to me than a 4 or 5 inch difference, but he's listed at 6'2", 219. I mean, that is prototypical NFL size. I think he's got the shiftiness and speed to play at that level. Like, I think Caleb Hawkins could be, again, I think some of the things that Oklahoma State is transitioning from and transitioning to, like, I think a lot of it is just still being underrated. And this is coming from somebody who picked them to win 8 games. Like, I didn't pick them to win 10 games, but I didn't pick them to win 8 games because I think that they're going to have a hard time rolling over Tulsa. Like, I think they'll get some road tests late in the season that'll be tough for them. I don't think the opening Saturday against Tulsa should be tough for them. So I think Hawkins should run absolutely wild. And I don't know, if you're ranking players you're excited to see, it's almost hard to do because we've watched so many highlights of Mestermaker, Hawkins, Young all offseason. So we've kind of seen them and know what they look like physically, at least. Like, we know what Mestermaker looks like throwing the ball. We kind of know what Hawkins looks like. Justin Bowick and Chris Barnes just feel like bonuses, like presents that we get to unwrap on Saturday. So honestly, I'm probably most excited to watch Bowick and Barnes because those are the unknowns. But man, just everybody on this offense, we can transition to the defense whenever you want to, but there are so many guys on this offense that I'm really excited to watch. Hell, I'm excited to watch Jacob Sexton at left tackle, who says he feels as good as he's felt in 5 years. And Jaleel Johnson's like, yeah, I can't get around him once he gets his hands on me. He's like, he's making me better because I'm having to work hard. But once he gets his hands on you, you're pretty much cooked. Like, there are just so many guys on that side of the ball that I'm going to be glued to.
That's what I'm looking forward to most is the offensive line play. And I don't say that very often, but as much as we laud and reminisce about Whedon, Blackman, all those guys, and rightfully so, they had the best offensive line in the Big 12 those years. They had dudes who could block, they could run the ball, they were very balanced. And you're right, we do tend to overlook Caleb Hawkins, who ran for 1,400 yards last year. That's fifth in the country. I don't think enough is being made that everyone talks about Mestermaker. I'm talking nationally. No one talks about they have the nation's fifth leading rusher alongside him as well. So I want to see Sexton, those newcomers on the offensive line. That to me will be perhaps the biggest indicator, because Colby, there were so many years recently, even before the last two, where we realized early on in the schedule, they can't run block. I mean, if they're having trouble run blocking South Alabama, it's going to be a long year, right? That's what I want to see. I want to see them move people. I want to see Hawkins get easy yards, not have to fight for a ton, at least at the first level. And that's what I'm looking forward to most. Because, yeah, I think the time will come for Barnes. He'll have his Tyreek-type moments, I think. I'm surprised you've talked about Barnes more than me. I'm the one who's been pumping him up all offseason. But, and sure, Bowick and them and all the North Texas guys. But can the offensive line move people and get easy rushing yards, at least early on in the game? That to me is the number one thing I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, absolutely. We can transition to defense shortly, but first I want to tell people about our good friends, Echo Contracting, proud sponsor of the Pistols Firing Podcast, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Echo is doing something fun for our listeners this fall, by the way. For all the games, they are going to be giving away a box, not a sleeve, a box of Echo-branded Pro V1s. So if you play golf at all, like Carson and I do, we are sickos. I know I'm a sicko. Carson, once upon a time, was a sicko. We like to play a lot of golf. You got to go to Twitter, follow @Echo Contracting, reply with your score prediction for Oklahoma State Tulsa before kickoff. There's a tweet that they sent out. I'm retweeting it right now. And there's like the rules are laid out there. Closest to the score wins. There's tiebreakers and stuff like that. And if the tiebreakers don't work, we'll flip a coin. We'll figure it out. We are not eligible. He said Marshall is eligible, but Marshall declined. He said they should go to somebody who won't immediately dump them into the pond on hole 6. at Lakeside. If you never played Lakeside in Stillwater, you got to get over the water on hole six. There's nowhere to really take a land route on hole six. It's like 150-yard, 170-yard par three. So apparently Marshall doesn't like his chances there. But, yeah, go follow Echo Contracting on Twitter. They're going to be doing this all season and giving golf balls away. So love our good sponsors. Go show them some love.
Yeah, I'm going to show Joe Brogan some love. Our loyal listener, Joe Brogan. Good to see his name again with the Super Chat. I wonder if I can – can I bring that on stage? Yes, there we go. Hey, look at this tech lording as we go here. Thank you, Joe Brogan. He says, week one, Super Chat, 45, 17 pokes, Tuck Fulsa with the emojis. Gotta love it. Thank you, Joe Brogan. Yeah, we can talk defense and give our scores, and we have some over-unders to get to, but look, I did pick Oklahoma State to win 10 games, but I did say I think my number one concern would be rushing defense. I think they do have some good defensive ends that can get after the passer. That's what they've sorely needed the last 2-3 years. But my number one concern is the interior of the defensive line. Can they stop the run? I mentioned the running back from Tulsa out of Auburn, really talented player. If he gets loose a bunch in this game, I think that'll be a big red flag in week one. So that's kind of what I'm looking for on the defensive side as well, Colby, is blocking, run blocking on the offensive side and run stuffing on the defensive side, I think is my number one thing I'm watching on Saturday.
Yeah, I like earlier in the week, too, Jahlil Johnson talking about this being the best defensive line that he's been a part of. And we've talked some about culture this offseason, and Eric Morris has talked about building the culture because you've got these three pods of guys coming from different places. You've got the Oklahoma State returners, the North Texas guys, and then all of the others that are coming in and probably somewhat feel like outsiders because, I mean, you get your cliques established, right? So you got to build a culture. I'm a big Ted Lasso guy. I know you're a big Ted Lasso guy. And Jahlil Johnson, I think, is going to be a big-time leader on this defense. We've talked about Ethan Weslowski and what he's going to do in the middle of the defense. But Jahlil Johnson did something that I think is a total Ted Lasso move. And he said that he was laying in bed one night thinking about how to, like, inspire his teammates, show love to his teammates and all this stuff. And he said what he did is he went out and he bought all of his fellow defensive linemen's jerseys, and he just started wearing them. Like, he just started showing up to practice wearing his teammates' jerseys, his other defensive linemen's jerseys. And the guys would get really excited. They started signing the jerseys for him. So, like, he's got signed jerseys of his teammates. Some of the other guys said that they're going to start doing it, too, start buying all of their teammates' jerseys and stuff and showing love and showing support. And, like, that's one of these culture-building things that a guy like Jahlil Johnson, who's been at Oklahoma State, who's been through, 3-9, 1-11, He's trying to build that, and he's talked about this line being the deepest, being the strongest of any that he's been on. I certainly hope that's the case from the 22 football games I've watched the last 2 years. Jahlil Johnson, Sadiq Clements, Jerry Lawson, Iman Oates, Braylon Rigsby, James Williams, like those are your guys that you're going to see, your main names that we're seeing on the play sheet. Malik Charles is listed on here at end as the backup to Jahlil Johnson. He's an oar with Kavion Huddleston, who led North Texas in sacks a year ago. I'm really excited to see what Rigsby looks like. He'll be wearing 94. Iman Oates will be out there in 99. Jahlil Johnson's 95. So those guys in the 90s will be names that you'll know and need to know. Jerry Lawson wears 92. So it'll be getting to know everybody's names. James Williams at 6'5", 256. He's a rush end wearing number 10. Carson, you like the rush end at 6'5", 256? I mean, that's an athlete, 6'5", 256, wearing number 10. He's going to look, Clint Schelf coming around the edge.
Tyreek Hill coming around the edge. Didn't Tyreek wear 10 at OSU?
He did, yeah. Really long,
but I love that. I love when D linemen wear single digits. 10's close enough. I love that. You don't want your defensive lineman to be too pretty, but if you want the single digit man, go for it. And a guy coming from Florida State knows how to wear a uniform as well. So I love that. But no, I mean, I think that's a good breakdown. And I do think Oklahoma State doesn't need to be great defensively. I think, who was it here? It was, one second. It was Paul Sears. He says, I'm crossing my fingers for defense reminiscent of 2011 with the forced turnovers. And that's something I spoke a lot about on our last show, is that's been a hallmark of the Schuyler Cassidy defense. They've had a very positive, I think they've been top 15, top 20 in the country in turnover and takeaways and turnover margin. And I think that's the recipe, right? Especially with like the other stats that I mentioned, with scoring being way down, lowest since 2009, ever since they put in those new rule changes in 2023, it's limited the amount of possessions per game. So if you're able to get this offense extra possessions, that's how you win all these coin flip games. Again, I have OSU winning 10 games because I think they're going to win coin flip games against Kansas State and Houston. A lot of numbers that came out this week were furthering my cause. I'll pull those up, Colby, as you get going again. But I think turnovers is going to be the recipe for this defense. They're not going to be a three and out style defense.
Yeah, and I think Skylar Cassidy knows that, and I think that's why these battles at corner are so important, and these position battles at corner are still wide open. There are two corner slots listed, and there are five guys. It's all or. Everything on the depth chart is an or at corner. It's LaDainian Fields, Kobe Foreman, Trudell Berry, Mo Horn, and Colin Lewis. So, like, that's five guys at corner. And Eric Morris was asked about that, and he said, look, five guys earn the opportunity to play. We've got to get out there when the bullets are flying and see – who establishes themselves. So, I mean, I guess it's good that five guys have earned the opportunity to play. That you can look at that glass half full, glass half empty. We haven't played a game yet, so everything's glass half full. I'm looking at it as like Coach Morris said, five guys who've earned the right to be on that field. And I don't know. I would expect to see LaDainian Fields out there early. I still think Mo Horn, the Texas Tech transfer, but Trudell Berry's gotten a lot of love too. He's got really good size. 6'1", 196, really good size for a corner. He's bigger than the other guys that they're going to have out there. Mohorn's 5'11", LaDainian Fields 6'1", Foreman's 5'10", Colin Lewis 5'10" as well. So all hovering in that 5'10" to 6'1" range all on the defensive side there. So, yeah, I think that corner battle is so, so important because you've got to be able to trust those guys in man coverage in order to bring the exotic blitzes that Skylar Cassidy is going to want to bring in order to create that chaos that creates turnovers. You need guys to be able to get to the quarterback in less than 3 seconds. Sometimes you're going to need to bring six or seven guys in order to do that. When that happens, you've got to be able to trust Fields, Foreman, Berry, Horn, Lewis. Like, those guys on the back end have to hold up. You look at the safeties, Christian Bodner is going to be back there. Quentin Hammonds, Evan Jackson are going to be back there. So all single-digit wearers at safety. Jackson's going to be wearing one, Bodner wearing six, and Quentin Hammonds wearing seven. I'm kind of down a number rabbit hole here at this point, Carson. Your wide receivers are wearing 0, 1, and 2. Wyatt Young is wearing his number 10 that he's worn, but Justin Bowick is wearing 0. Miles Coleman is wearing 1. Chris Barnes is wearing 2, and his backup, Terrence Lewis, is wearing 3. It's like we've got 0, 1, 2, 3 going to be running around at receiver. Carson, it's going to be beautiful. I love single-digit receiver numbers. It's going to be beautiful.
It's just chef's kiss. I mean, the Uni Heisman Award each week is going to be tough if that's what we're running out there. No more of this, what was it? We had a long run of white dudes playing receiver wearing 17. You had Charlie Moore.
Dylan Stoner.
You had,
Stoner.
Stoner. JP Richardson for a period of time, I believe.
Yeah.
It was like a tradition. Whoever plays slot gets the jersey. So that'll be a lot of fun. But speaking of numbers, you had some over-unders you wanted to get to. I think we're going to go with some over-under totals for Mestemaker and company.
Yeah, and you can let us know in the chat how you feel about these numbers. You think we're too low, we're too high. For Mestemaker, we flirted around with the idea, pardon me, between 300 and 325 somewhere. Let's go right in the middle. Let's put it at 310. 310 over-under passing yards for Drew Mestemaker. He obviously fired it all over the place last year. I think we're probably both taking the over, but I don't know by a lot. I mean, he could have a great day and throw for 280 yards. Like, I mean, that's nothing to slouch at. If Hawkins breaks a long one or a couple of long ones, if the thing gets out of hand, if you do get turnovers and you start with short fields, like, your total yards can come down. We've talked about, you talked about earlier in the week, overall offensive numbers being down in college. So I feel like 310, that's a pretty good number. That's a hard number to always eclipse.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to hit a big one to Young or Barnes to get there. I'm actually going to go under because I do think that Hawkins will have a really good day. I do think the running game will establish itself pretty well. And I think he gets very close. I'm thinking like 295 and three touchdowns, something along those lines. But if he goes over 310, I think that's a statement throughout the country that this offense is already humming and this quarterback should be amongst the tops of your list for all the quarterback awards, at least after week one. We'll see. I'm gonna surprise people go under on that.
So let's rifle off his totals from last year, see how many times he would have gone over 310 in his prolific passing season. Open the season 329, and then he goes 224, 211, 249, 234, 336, 277, 608 against Charlotte, 234, 298, 469, 366, 294, 250. So in 13 games last year, he would have gone over five times. But you could also make the case that this will be one of the weakest opponents on Oklahoma State's schedule. Again, Tulsa went 4-8 last year. How much can they improve? I don't know. I think it's going to be really close. Since you went under, I'll go over. I'll put him somewhere in the 25 for 38 range for 330 yards and three touchdowns. Again, weaker opponent. Maybe he can get there. As far as Hawkins goes, I think a good number is probably 120. I'm looking here. Hawkins last year, he would have gone over 120 one, two, three, four, five, six times in 13 games. Caleb Hawkins would have gone over 120. So that feels like a pretty good number for me. Week one against Tulsa. Hot game. Maybe Trey Page rotates in some, but 120 feels like a good number. What side of that do you want to be on?
I think I got, if I'm going under on Mestemaker, I got to go over here. I got to stick to the plan. I'm going to go over slightly, probably 130, 135 in there, in that range, maybe 150 if he breaks a long one. A lot of this depends on field position. You know, if Oklahoma State's getting pinned back a bunch, then this, I think they're going to go over on both. I kind of see it playing out more of a standard affair there on that end, barring any, you know, turnovers, things of that nature. So I'll go over. I think it's a statement by the offensive line in Hawkins. I think this is a good showcase for them with so much attention being on Mestemaker and the receivers. I think it's a good opportunity for them to make their presence known. And I'll go over.
Yeah. So the 6 out of 13 last year was a little bit misleading as they were discovering who Caleb Hawkins was. He wasn't like the full-time guy at running back. So he didn't even lead the team in rushing at North Texas last year until week five. So in the last nine games that North Texas played, he went over that 120 mark six times in those nine games. I think he goes over it against Tulsa. I've got two overs now. If you can't tell, I'm pretty bullish on what they're going to do against Tulsa. I think they're going to hang half 100 on them. I think they're going to put up 500-600 total yards of offense. So, you know, call me a homer if you want to. I'm fine with that. Wyatt Young, Carson, I'm looking here at his receiving totals last year. From week October 18th, that's going to be week seven on, he went 102, 190, 143, 295 against Rice. 127 in that game against Temple. So every time he went over 100, he except one game he had 102, but the rest of the time, if he went over 100, he went well over it. I don't know. Are we just putting it at 99.5 for Wyatt Young?
Yeah, I think that's a good line. What did you make of him having the or next to his name? That kind of ruffled everybody's feathers online. When the you know, when depth charts come out, people are just searching for something to talk about. There's something in here I got to see that I need to get my microscope out on. And, you know, Sam Humphries asked me about it on the Sports Channel, and I just don't put a lot of stock into it. I mean, to me, depth charts are strictly motivational from the head coach. That's really what depth charts are for. I think it's also to reward guys who, yeah, I think sometimes they put guys in there as starters who busted their tail and, you know, did everything right, went to class, was respectful to me and the public. You know, I think that's part of it. So that didn't concern me, but I just think there's a lot more mouths to feed in this offense versus last year at North Texas. So I'm going to go under. I think Bowick and Barnes might lead the way receiving. That's kind of my prediction. I think Bowick will lead in touchdowns. I think Barnes might break a few off. They've been playing him on the outside, Barnes. He's more than just a gadget slot guy, I think. So Young might lead the team, but I'm going to go under.
Yeah, let's see. Barnes is listed at the Z. Bowick is listed at the X. So the X is your outside downfield, like big-time receiver. Give me your number one corner. Let's get after it. Chris Barnes listed at the Z, so that's going to be really kind of a do-everything. That's more of your gadget receiver that you can do a lot of things with. You can line him up outside, send him deep. You can line him up in the slot. You can send him in motion, give him a jet sweep, things like that. Coleman and Wyatt Young are both listed as the Y. It's going to be more of your slot receiver, almost exclusively going to be lining up inside. The or did nothing for me. I didn't mind the or at all. I didn't care about the or. I really didn't even it wasn't even a double take for me. I was just like, okay, yeah, Miles Coleman and Wyatt Young play the same position. They were both on the team last year. They both came up. They worked hard all offseason. It's going to be 150 degrees. Also, can we allow for the possibility that this team's going to run four wide receiver sets some of the time? So some of the times you're going to have Bowick, Barnes, Coleman, and Young on the field. Boy, I like the sound of that. How's that for your five skill position players? Mestemaker at quarterback, and then let's run out Caleb Hawkins at running back, and then Bowick, Coleman, Barnes, and Wyatt Young. Like, that's just, sure, minus 13 and a half against Tulsa. Sure, Vegas, sure. Boy, I'm going to have some crow to eat.
They can go five wide, too. You saw that some at North Texas last year. They can go five wide, which is just, you know, incredible for based on what we've been watching the last two, 3 years or 10, if you want to go that far.
I'm telling you, it's going to be like being transported into another dimension. I'm going over on Wyatt Young for the simple reason that I think game one at Oklahoma State, and maybe I'm not factoring this in enough to my Oklahoma State's going to beat them like a drum prediction. Drew Mestemaker might have some nerves putting on that orange and black for the first time. He might go out and feel a little bit uncomfortable early in that game. And who's going to be the safety blanket? Who's going to be the guy that over and over again, he feels like, okay, I know where Wyatt Young's at. I know he's got me. Like, those two connected a bunch of times last year. I think that's where the trust is. I think if a receiver goes over 100 yards, it's possible four of them go for 80 or 90 and none of them go over 100. If one of them goes over 100, it's not because of a big play. It's because of just a consistent big day. I think it's Wyatt Young, so I'm going to take the over on that 99.5. So I'm over on Mestemaker, I'm over on Hawkins, and I'm over on Young. Pretty bullish on the triplets' first appearance in orange and black.
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, that's, you could very well be right. I mean, I'm the one picking them to win 10. You're the one picking them to win 8. So I have sign me up.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. It's those November road games that always do me in. I always chicken out when it's time to pick Oklahoma State to win November road games. Maybe it's the Thurman Thomas amount of years I've been on this earth watching Oklahoma State lose November road games. Let's see here. Blake Davison with a super chat. Mestemaker, Hawkins, Young, Barnes, Bowick, and Coleman. We could put up 100. Thank you, Blake, for that. And then
I like it, Blake. I like it. Let's instead of hang half 100, let's hang 100. That'd be a way to open some eyes nationally.
Yeah, no doubt. I'll throw this one up there too. Orange, whatever, numbers and letters. Embarrassment of riches at skill positions reminds me of the Rudolph years. I mean, dude, I hadn't actually like sat down and said it out loud, but when you think about those guys, like if you want to run five wide with your skill guys, that is, I mean, I don't know everybody's roster top to bottom in the Big 12 or nationally, but I'm putting those five up against most places. I'm sure Ohio State and LSU and places like that, Miami, Malachi Toney and Mark Williams and those guys, there are other schools that I'm sure feel very confident in their skill position players. I think Oklahoma State fans have every right to feel good about theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I made that comparison, I think, I don't know if it was with you or with Sam Humphries on The Animal. It reminds me so much of the 2015 Rudolph season. You had an NFL quarterback. And maybe 2015 is probably not even the right analogy because this team has way more weapons at the skill positions. That was pretty much Rudolph. This is Marshall Scott's entire thesis that Rudolph's the greatest quarterback in history based on his supporting cast.
Oh, I mean,
you put an
he didn't have Justice Hill, James Washington, Tyron Johnson, Marcel Aitman. Like, he had plenty of guys who played on NFL fields. Calm down, Marshall. Calm down. He makes a throw.
Forgot about Washington there for a second.
He makes the throw on 4th and 4 in 2017 against Oklahoma, and we can have that conversation. Otherwise, I'm going to watch the rerun of Brandon Weeden holding that trophy in the air.
Well, I think you would agree that they didn't have, you know, a stellar defense or offensive line, I think is probably Marshall's point. I think that's probably what we're going to see this year. I think when you have an NFL caliber quarterback, which, look, another reason I'm so bullish on Drew Mestemaker is beyond the numbers that we already know about North Texas. Every time an NFL scout, beat reporter, NFL player, didn't matter, saw him at Manning camp, everyone that went to Manning camp and came back, Drew Mestemaker was one of the first names out of their mouth. This kid clearly has NFL ability today. And so you put that in the Big 12. This is where, you know, this is why I'm picking him to win 10 games. I mean, how many times did Mason Rudolph win games that they flat out weren't the better, more talented team. It, the difference is having an NFL quarterback. So I don't think they're going to score 100, but it's part of my thesis as to why they'll win 10 games this year.
Somebody just commented, Pokes 93 says, we need a season prediction from Mama Powell. I'll text her right now. Yeah. And get that from her. I'm betting it's going to be north of where Carson and I are at, if I had to guess.
No, she can't go 11 or 12. Come on, Mama Powell.
You don't think she can? You don't think she can?
She could, but she's rational when she's not mad at the referees.
Mom, how many wins for OSU this year? And I will report back. I will. My guess is 11. I bet she doesn't think we can beat Oregon. I'm betting she picks us to win 11 games.
She's got us beating Tech and everybody else. Gotcha. We'll see.
While she figures that out, let's show some love to our newest sponsor. Farm Service Company is a real estate brokerage spanning three generations of Oklahoma State graduates in Chickasha, Oklahoma. They offer farm management for non-resident landowners, farm and ranch appraisal, and farm and ranch sales. Check out farmservicerealestate.com for more information. Love the good people from Chickasha, America. My stomping grounds, Carson.
Fighting chicks.
Yeah, the Fighting Chicks. I think they get underway tomorrow. Good luck to the Fighting Chicks.
Yeah. What your colors were, like purple and gold?
Purple and gold, baby. Yep. My whole life I wore purple and gold.
Look, I love Chickasha. I love doing this show with you. That's tough. Being the Fighting Chicks with purple and gold as your colors. That's a tough hand to be dealt.
I'm just saying. I mean, it wasn't great. And to tell you the truth, when I got to Oklahoma State as a freshman, my wardrobe definitely still had too much purple in it. It's a miracle that I got an amazing woman like Dana to fall in love with me at 18, 19 years old, walking around in my purple and gold.
Well, you probably went to Chris's and got you some orange, you know, try to balance out the old closet. Right.
I've got it.
One more over under, I think we had, then let's do our score predictions and we'll answer all the questions people have that are still tuned in with us. Appreciate everybody joining the show.
So she sent me a couple texts back right now. My mom has, she's going back and forth. She says 10 and two. I really want to say 11 and one. I'm not really sure where that second loss is going to come from, but all you crazy people have me questioning my team's abilities. So at 10 and two, she's questioning her team's abilities, but her official prediction is 10 and two. She backed off, an 11 and one. The other one I wanted to
she sat her butt in that stadium. Yeah. And watched that product for the last 2.5-3 years.
Carson, she won't leave. She won't leave until it's triple zeros on the clock. And I'm like, before I had kids, that was fine. Before I had a kid, that was fine. If we're going 0-9 in conference, we're getting out of here early in the third quarter, baby. You better believe it. This year, we're staying for the games. But last year, no.
And it didn't crush any of her confidence. I love that. You know, I think OSU fans are very rational. I think Dave Hudson, his survey every year, they're pretty conservative in their win predictions, but she's bounced back in a big way. I love that. We predicted the same record. She's not too out over skis. I love that. One more over under, then we'll do our picks.
Yeah, I wanted to, because I think whether they hit this can be kind of all encompassing for how successful of a day they have defensively. So I would just want a total team sacks. I wanted to put the number at 3.5. Because if they go over that, I think we can feel pretty good that they got after Tulsa and had a good day. If they go under that, that tells me that Tulsa was able to run the ball somewhat effectively, didn't have to totally play from behind all day. So I feel like 3.5 is a pretty good number. So I don't know. You feel like that's a good number? Do you feel like they're going to go crazy with 6 or 7? What do you feel about that number?
Oh, if you could pull up their sack totals per game last year quickly, that'd be nice. That's probably tougher to pull up than rushing your passing yards. What's that?
North Texas or Oklahoma State?
Let's do North Texas, probably. I don't think much translates from OSU last year. You're probably right about that.
I thought it was going to be easy to pull up. Every stat is here except for
While you look it up, I am... Again, I think I'm way more concerned about interior rush defense than I am pass rush. I think that the level of talent they've had added, again, James Williams, the kid from Florida State, he was in every PFF grade for pass rushing, and his PFF grades were off the charts rushing the passer. I'm really banking on him getting after the quarterback, starting with Tulsa. And I just think they're going to, I think Skylar Cassidy, that's kind of his MO, is he likes to create havoc, create chaos, and create turnovers. So I'm probably going to go over, but I did want to hear your numbers first if you have them.
North Texas last year had 24 total sacks in 14 games. That's 1.7 sacks per game. Now, again, you get to a game against Oregon, maybe they don't have any against Oregon. Maybe they don't have any against Tech, teams like that. Maybe they get 4 or 5 against Tulsa and don't go there. I think 3.5 is a really good number on that. Because of my score prediction, I have to think Oklahoma State's going to play from ahead. Tulsa's going to be playing from way behind. If I think Tulsa's playing from way behind, I have a hard time going under 3.5 sacks. So I'll be full homer. I'll go over on all my over-unders. And then we'll throw this up from Joe Brogan, who says, we need to change the paddle people rule. I want nonstop paddling like the good old days. Yeah, that's just what we need. That's just what we need is Texas Tech fans having one more thing to you-know-what about. Did you see, Carson, thank you, Joe Brogan, by the way, did you see the Cody Campbell quotes that came out today from this docuseries they did on Texas Tech about, I am absolutely certain that we did the right thing. We handled everything with the utmost of integrity, and don't think that we won't remember all of the backlash. We'll remember it when we're up by 40 and we're still throwing the football, running the score up. Okay, Cody Campbell. Okay, run in your mouth. Dude's been able to buy everything he's wanted in life since he made his money. And the one thing that he couldn't buy was Brendan Sorsby's eligibility, and he's going to throw a big old baby tantrum fit about it. Okay, Cody Campbell. Never mind. Go ahead.
It's a dangerous game that the administration at Texas Tech has been playing, because he's serious. I think he thinks he can strap on a headset and talk to McGuire and say, keep throwing the ball in the end zone. And I think at this point, McGuire might have to listen. I mean, the guy's funded his entire existence in Lubbock. I mean, Joey McGuire was a very average coach before Cody Campbell came along. I mean, he was very average. And now with his roster and checkbook, they're the Big 12 champs. So it's a dangerous game to let a booster run your athletic department, be the president of your board of regents, and decide you're throwing the football in the fourth quarter of Big 12 games, which I don't think that's that far-fetched. I think Cody Campbell might be down there on the sidelines running around doing whatever the hell he wants to do. He's funding the entire thing.
Cody Campbell gives major. I'm making another Ted Lasso reference. If you haven't seen the show, I apologize. But also, if you haven't seen the show, shame on you. Major Rupert Mannion vibes from Cody Campbell.
Oh, yeah. That's a good analogy. I actually just watched the most recent episode. This season's off to a slow start, but
really?
Great show nonetheless. Yeah.
I've liked this season so far. We're halfway through the most recent episode. Aaron Yuntz said no spoilers. I don't want to give anybody any spoilers, but I will just say, I thought they transitioned it nicely, and I think it's been mostly just classic Ted Lasso.
Too many new characters, not enough development. It's too little all over the place for me. That's neither here nor there. What's your score prediction, Colby?
Carson, and I don't like change.
Yeah.
Score prediction, 52-20. I think Oklahoma State, I think we roll them. This offense, like, how many of those names did we rattle off? Like, Jacob Sexton at left tackle, I think, is a huge addition. The fact that Ashton Lepo at 6'7", 330 wasn't just able to outright win the right tackle job. Like, he's having to battle with Sean Torgerson, Tyler Mercer coming over from Kansas. Like, I think we got a chance to be decent up front. And then Messemaker, Hawkins, Young, Coleman, Barnes, Bowick. Give me Jahlil Johnson, Braylon Rigsby, Iman Oates, those guys on the defensive line. Let's figure it out in the secondary. But I think Wozlowski is going to be good at linebacker. Tate Romney is an old, he's 25 years old. Isaiah Chisholm was really good last year for UCLA. Like, I just think there's more than meets the eye with this Oklahoma State team. I don't think they're Mean Green North. I think they're much, much more than that. And as a reminder, I'm not tweeting my score prediction at Echo Contracting, but go follow them and do that to win some Echo branded Pro V1s. But yeah, I've got a 52-20, Carson.
Yeah, I already forgot what score I gave you on last week's show. I think it was 52-17. So we're very similar. I think this is a really, for all of the detractors and the people that are picking OSU to be 5-7, win 6 games, 7 games, maybe even 8. I think this game, albeit against Tulsa, a team that you've rightfully mentioned went 4-8 last year after coming into Stillwater and having the biggest win they've had in a long time. I think people are going to see what you and I have just been talking about on this show, like the level of skill talent the nation's number one offense being improved and put into a Power Four conference with Power Four surrounding pieces. And that's just a level of firepower that I don't think many teams in the country, much less Tulsa or much less the Big 12, can deal with. And I think Saturday is going to be the first preview of what they're capable of. I think Mestemaker and Hawkins have a field day and they score 52 points and win handily. And I think they're going to spread the love enough to where that's where some of my unders came in. I think it's going to be, there's a lot of mouths to feed. This is not going to be just Brandon Whedon throwing to Blackman the whole game and then sprinkling in Josh Cooper here and there. This is going to be whoever's wide open, because somebody's going to be, and we're going to be able to run the football for the first time in a very long time at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and one thing that we should point out too, and this is really bad timing for Tulsa with those names we just read off at skill position. Tulsa's got a couple of cornerbacks that are out right now. A first-team All-American and Jim Thorpe finalist last year who led the American Conference with 5 interceptions, came in second with 7 pass breakups, is out. Elijah Green out with injury for Tulsa this weekend. That's a bad player to be missing for Trey Lamb's defense going up against Oklahoma State. So we'll throw a couple of the listener predictions on the screen here. 49-24 from J-Rod, 41-24 Aaron Yuntz, 45-27 Orange numbers letters. So yeah, it's
you have to change your username to Orange numbers letters now.
Yeah, right. That's exactly. Great. I think most people are somewhere in the 40s for Oklahoma State, somewhere in the 20s. For Tulsa, which is fine. If it ends up being 41-21, I'll be happy.
Yeah, and if you have questions, fire them off now. We'll get to as many as we can. And there were some interesting numbers that I texted you this week that really kind of encapsulated my thesis as to why Oklahoma State is going to win 10 games this year. You know, Bill Conley from ESPN, he's a big stats guy, analytics guy. He like simulated the season like I can't remember how many times, but the odds of winning the Big 12, he has Tech at 29.7%, BYU 14.7%, Utah 7%, Arizona 6.6%, K-State 6.2%, Oklahoma State 5.8%, Houston below OSU at 5.4%, and then TCU at 4%. So when you look at Kansas State at 6.2%, OSU at 5.8%, and where's my other coin flip game? K-State at 6.2, Houston at 5.4. Those are coin flip games. And the firepower I just mentioned, I don't think Houston, who averaged less than 30 a game, nor Texas averaged 40 plus, is going to be able to keep up. That's the whole deal. And I think where that will go wrong will be defensively, which that's no secret. If they can't get stops and they can't force turnovers, then they might be in real trouble as far as getting to 10 wins is concerned. But I think Tulsa, this game is going to absolutely be a preview of what I expect. And another stat here too, Colby, Houston returns 50% of their offense, 50% of their defense. Arizona State, another swing game. They only return 31% of their offense, only 27% of their defense. K-State returns 40% of their offense and 49% of their defense. And that's the deal too. OSU has 91 new players. I know that's the most, but every team is reshuffling the deck. Every team has 40, 50 new players. So these teams that are slotted above them based on what they did last year, like at Kansas State and at particularly Houston, who you and I both agree won a lot of close games and overachieved a little bit, I don't think me picking OSU to win 10 games is all that far-fetched when you run those numbers.
Yeah, look, it could end up looking not crazy at all by the end of the season. Now, it's going to come down to the close games because, like, at Kansas State, I don't think they're going to Kansas State and beating them 45-21. You're going to have to win some close games, but your logic of being able to outscore people is there. It's not like any of these teams are juggernauts, aside from Oregon and Texas Tech, obviously. And, again, I give Oklahoma State a chance to win that game in November. Maybe Tech will be up 40 and still be throwing the ball to rub it in, like Cody Campbell says. Maybe my comments will get down to Cody Campbell, and he'll tell Joey McGuire, hey, we really got to stick it to the Oklahoma State guys. There's some nerd on the internet who's calling me a dork. But, yeah, we'll see where it goes. But I think they're going to be a good football team, Carson. We've got every reason to be excited. If you're not going to get excited with all the changes that Oklahoma State's made this offseason, if you're one of these wait-and-see people, like, come on, man, it's preseason. You're supposed to be excited preseason whenever you've got all these new toys, fun new coach, said, done, all the right things. Also, has anybody else been watching North Texas highlights this summer? Pretty fun. Pretty fun.
Yeah, Pokes 93 asked me, I neglected to mention what I thought OSU would do after winning 10 games. I think that gets them in the Big 12 championship game. I'm not picking them to win it. I think they might have to play Texas Tech again, and I have them losing to Texas Tech. I think that's, you always like getting a second shot at a team. It's always hard to beat a team twice, that old cliche, but I can't go too far. I can't pick them to win the Big 12 conference, something they did one time under Mike Gundy in their very first year under Eric Morris. I can't go that far, but I do think going 10-2 in the Big 12 is enough to get in. Now, they don't play BYU. They don't play Utah. One of those teams could theoretically go 11-1 along with Texas Tech. So maybe they could be on the outside looking in as well. But I think that's good enough to get in.
Yeah, I think it definitely could be. And, man, if they wind up in Arlington in year one, just absolute smash to the moon. Eric Morris for president if they make it to Arlington.
Get this offense in Jerry World. Get them on that turf. This team's even scarier in a dome. In the dead of winter, get them in a dome and see what happens. I like my chances against Tech in that environment, truly.
Yeah, I'm all in. I love a fast track for a team like this. Joe Brogan asks, plus or minus 230 total rushing yards. I'm probably going under 230. That feels steep. If I'm predicting Mestemaker to throw for 330, 350, somewhere like that, I think Hawkins probably goes for in the 130 to 150 range, and the rest of the team, you gather another 40, 50, 60 rushing yards. You also have to remember sacks count against you in college. Hopefully there won't be too many of those against Tulsa. But yeah, I think we're going over 230 total rushing yards. I think they probably settle in more around the 200 number.
Yeah, I think that was close to their average last year. They were top. Oh gosh, where is it? I don't have it here handy. No, they weren't. They weren't as high as I thought. They were 19th in the country, averaging 200 yards almost flat per game. So they were 19th in the country last year. That is a high number. But they could. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question, but I think that'd be kind of tough to get to with a brand new offensive line. That'd be tough.
They went over 230 rushing yards as a team three times last year. Three times in 14 games. So
and a lot of this, Colby, a lot of this we didn't mention is up to how Tulsa wants to defend them, you know. Mike Gundy would always get up there and say, "Oh, we just take what they give us." And there's some of that's true. You know, if they load up the box to stop Hawkins, well, then I think you're over on Mestemaker's looking great. But if they really want to slow down Mestemaker, a la the Patrick Mahomes defense with the two high safeties, and try to keep everything in front of them, I think that's when Hawkins eats. So a lot of it will be determined by Tulsa and what they do.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting, the Elijah Green injury. Like, that dude's an absolute star at corner, and him being out, they've got some decisions to make, whether they really want to do some drop seven, drop eight kind of thing and give extra help to their other corners, or if they just want to kind of try to trust the guy they have out there. I just think the Elijah Green injury, that's a big injury. Like, that's Tulsa's best player defensively is not going to be out there in week one against the Eric Morris offense. That seems problematic. Pokes 93, thoughts on the LSU ruling, pros in college ball? I think the SEC holding firm is awesome. I think LSU continuing to fight it in court is a joke. I think a Louisiana judge being able to tell us that a Louisiana school can play NFL players at Louisiana State University is a joke. This is really problematic, and I hope it gets solved, and I hope the SEC does not back down. Lane Kiffin, he's been a troublemaker for a long time. You're on a little bit bigger stage now at LSU than what you've been. I don't care for the way he started his tenure down there.
No, it's just I'm a little torn on it because it almost takes something this ludicrous for real change to happen in college football.
Good point.
And we all know change needs, like, this current model and system is beyond repair. It's absurd. Like, this, the fact that Brennan Sorsby was able to leave Cincinnati to go to the highest bidder in Tech is wrong. In addition to all the gambling and stuff, which was beyond reprehensible, that Tech tried to push that through. And I think this is just the latest example proving how broken the sport really is right now structurally. So if Lane Kiffin starts trying to bring in NFL players, I almost welcome it at this point. Let's create as much chaos as possible before, like, Congress and the House step in and fix this, because it needs fixed. This is just a joke at this point.
Yeah, it's an absolute disaster. They've got to figure something out. Post 93, another good question. What would make you smile more, OU losing at home to UTEP or Texas losing to Texas State? Just me being cynical. A no-brainer for me, if you've been listening to me over the years. OU losing at home to UTEP would make me smile more. They're a 41-point favorite. Not going to happen. But, yes, I would get quite the Friday night chuckle out of that.
You know what actually makes me smile is my group text with all my high school friends that we started a fantasy football league my freshman year of high school, and we're still in the same group text. It's all OU guys. And all they wanted to do was make fun of me because we played weeknight football games. Back when the Thursday night became a thing, we've played on Friday. Oh, that's just something OU would never do, ever. We would never wear alternate uniforms either. That silly school up in Stillwater, that's like peewee stuff. Us proud Sooners would never do anything of the sort. Since that time, they still wear the most hideous alternate uniforms ever created in those anthracite gray monstrosities where you can't even read the numbers. Or so it looks like a flag football team uniform. And now they're playing UTEP on a Friday night. It's just hilarious and poetic, and it just makes me smile. So that's what makes me smile most.
Yeah, it's perfect. Is that their bring the wood, lay the wood? What do they call those uniforms? They're the worst uniforms in football history.
That was their first rendition of alternates, where the white jersey was really cream. They were trying to do the crimson and cream.
Okay, thing. That's, I'm like, thinking of something different. I'm thinking of something. Like
They were like their unified jerseys, where they all said like unified on the back, okay, or something,
yeah,
like that.
I know the exact jersey you're talking about. Yeah, I know the exact
they're
jersey.
Awful. You're
about. Yeah, hideous. Absolutely hideous.
They don't know how to do alternate uniforms in Norman. They know how to win football games. I think they're gonna be really good this year, but unis ain't it. And now they're playing on weeknights. The hoity-toity Sooners are now playing on a Friday night. You gotta love it.
I will. I'll call out the full name this time. Orange 97Z28. Asking the important questions, recording schedule, asking live YouTube post-game podcasts on Sundays and game preview podcasts on Thursdays for the duration of the season. Our plan is Thursdays for the duration of the season. Post-game will be a little bit different. Like this week, we're planning to go live at 6:15. Game's at 2:45. It's a road game. We're planning to go live at 6:15 right after the game. Game goes long, could be 6:30, but the plan is 6:15 this Saturday. I go to all the home games. It's like Oregon week. It's an 11 o'clock game. We'll probably be able to record something that night. But a lot of the games, like if I'm going to a home game at 2:30 or a night game, then I got to get home, get kiddo to bed and stuff. Those weeks, we'll record on Sunday. Follow us on Twitter, at Colby J. Powell, at Carson_OKC. Pre-game pods should be pretty consistent. If something pops up and we have to change our schedule, we'll send it out on Twitter. Post-game will be a little more dependent on kick times and the week of. But this week, we're planning on Saturday at 6:15, right after the game. Hopefully, everybody's wound up, excited, and we'll be able to come on live just right after Triple Zeros.
Yeah, and if there's a Saturday where Colby's at the game, and we'll do the full show Sunday, but I might hop on here and go live just immediately after the game, just do my quick rapid fire reaction, answer some questions, and then we'll do the full show on Sunday on whenever that occurs. If Colby's up in Stillwater, I don't mind hopping on here. I likely won't be going to very many games this year, and we'll at least have some sort of live reaction in the moment if Colby's out of pocket. So be looking forward to that. I'll tweet all that out as well. So one last thing before we go, Colby, we're gonna do a lock of the week, and I don't have to go very far for mine. I think this line is way too low. I would put it at 21, 22, even probably maybe 24. Maybe that's going too much, but this number's too low. My lock of the week's Oklahoma State. I think this is an easy cover, and everyone who didn't bet it's gonna be like, what was I thinking? Of course OSU blew them out of the water.
Yeah. Okay. So I went national. Oklahoma State, I love minus the 13.5, but I actually did a little bit of research earlier today. And Carson, what if I told you that tomorrow night on a Friday night, there is a team traveling about 3,000 miles, crossing three time zones, playing a game that will be starting at 9 o'clock, their body clock time, but 6 o'clock for their opponent's body clock time. And that team that is traveling 3,000 miles is a 24-point favorite. Would you like them to cover those 24 points? Because I think pretty highly of Miami as a football program. They were one drive away from winning the national championship last year. But Miami is going to Stanford tomorrow, a Stanford team that played in week zero, by the way. So they've kind of already got their legs under them a little bit. Miami's going out there with a new quarterback, should be a good quarterback in Darian Mensah. But we've seen them struggle going out west since the ACC added teams that are in California. Now they've got to go to Stanford week one on a Friday night, travel 3,000 miles. That game's starting at 9 o'clock Eastern time. They're going to be playing football still at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning as far as their body clocks are concerned. Give me Stanford. Earlier today, they were plus 24, of course. Now they're plus 23.5. I lost the hook, but I'll still take Stanford plus 23.5. I think Miami wins the game, but I'm not going to be shocked if it's close at halftime or even through three quarters, just with the circumstances surrounding the travel and the kick time. Week one team not having played, the other team having played. I'll take Stanford. Give me the points.
I love that. And my mind immediately went to the year 2000 when Oklahoma played Florida State in the national championship game. There was basically a three-way tie there with Miami. Miami lost to Washington in the Pacific Northwest. That 2000 Miami team lost to a team that they would have beaten by 50 in Miami, probably. I mean, that Washington team was really good. They were ranked in the top 10, I think. I'm going too far there. But your time zone things, that's where my mind went. I really like that prediction. We'll have to see if it comes to fruition, but I really like that. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, it matters whenever you have to make that travel. I also had it fresh on the brain because I read a story recently about having to travel, like West Coast teams going east and having to play early, or East Coast teams going west and having to play late. And like the team that has the time zone beneficial, whatever you want to call it, it's late. That team covers the spread a higher than normal percentage of the time.
You heard it here first. Colby's going to be making people money this season, I think. So that's Colby's lock of the week. That's mine. Colby, I got to get going. Thanks everyone for joining the show. Anything else before we wrap up?
I don't believe so. Yeah, it is late. We appreciate everyone who's been on with us. We join us for all these live pods. Like I said, we'll be live after the game Saturday evening, 6:15. Carson, I'm gassed up. It's football season.
It's great to have, we don't know yet, but I'm pretty sure we have a relevant championship level contending football team again. Now, whether they get to that level remains to be seen, but one thing is for certain, they're no longer the worst program in the country. It's been a long slog these last 2 years. We appreciate everyone who still tunes in. We're going to have a lot more fun this year starting Saturday. I cannot wait, and I cannot wait to break it all down with you in our post-game show. So thanks everyone for joining, and Colby, we will chat then.
Absolutely. One last comment. Post93 says, thank you guys. Appreciate y'all very much. My 2-week-old daughter is stoked to be indoctrinated starting now. Congratulations, Post93. As a girl dad myself, you're going to have a lot of fun taking her to Stillwater over the years. We appreciate everyone joining us on YouTube, everyone who's watching and listening after the fact. We'll be back Saturday night, hopefully recapping a big Oklahoma State win. As always, go Pokes!